Hi, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. Welcome to Letting Go with Guy Finley. Guy is the best-selling author of Let Go and Live in the Now, and is the founding director of nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. And now, here's Guy Finley.
I thought we would try something a little different for a change. And I've asked a friend and associate of mine, Dr. Ellen Dickstein, to sit with me and go through some questions that come in one of the many forms that they do to my foundation. We get emails all the time. And so I thought what we would do as a fun investigation and a good way for us to learn some things about ourselves that we can see in ourselves through looking at other people's lives would be to go through some of these questions. And I want to start the whole dialogue that we're going to have by encouraging you to understand something that should be evident by the time we're done with our meeting here. And that is that everyone is just like you. It's just that they've learned to pretend pretty much the way you and I have learned to pretend, that we're quite unique. And the truth is, in many ways, that we are more unique than any of us could ever possibly know. But that true uniqueness has been stolen from us by a wish to appear like what we believe it means to appear as someone successful or wise or strong or confident. The attempt to appear to be anything at all is a living nightmare. And our world today is filled with masters of appearance. We ourselves have become masters of appearance. The princes and princesses of disguise. Because the way in which we meet the world, the ideas that we greet it with, the purposes that we have taken from what have been handed to us down through generation to generation, have led us to the point where in our heart of hearts, we're loaded with questions that all have to do with, basically, why the heck is my life the way it is? Now, you know, Paul, Willie, Barbara, Sue, each and every person from Brazil all the way to Burbank, California, is going to ask the question differently. But what we can learn and should from a meeting such as we're going to have now is that we're not so different. And that at the root of what really hurts so many of us is the same essential misunderstanding about who we are and what we're here for, why we're alive on this planet. And I believe if you just listen closely enough, that you'll begin to hear there's a theme that runs through every answer that's going to come up from the questions that Dr. Dickstein is going to read. So I think with that little introduction, we'll go ahead and we'll start our dialogue and discussion. Hi.
Hi, Guy. This first question is one that I think many of us have who are wondering, how can we apply higher principles in our everyday lives? And this question comes from Eugene, who lives in Los Angeles, and he asks, in letting go, I can't decide what's practical at work and what's not. I have a situation where someone is doing their best to edge me out and one-up me all the time. What practical steps do I take, or do I just let things take their course, including me being more or less demoted? So he's pretty worried.
We have a mentality that we need to begin seeing as not being our friend. And that mentality is the either-or mentality. Mm-hmm. Basically, when we look at a situation like Eugene from wherever the gentleman's from, we think to ourselves, well, I either have to be someone who's going to stand up and be strong and no one's going to monkey with me and I'll get even or whatever it is, or I'm going to be a living doormat and people will be walking over me for the rest of my life. And that either or mentality is a series of choices, if you will, that come up from a certain part of us that just by its existence, we should be able to see we shouldn't be listening to it. And that has to do with confusion. When a person's threatened by a situation, the first thing that he or she does, falling back into fear, is they try to find a way to escape what they fear. So that either I'm going to be strong and overcome my enemy, or because I'm not sure if that's the right path, I'll just have to take the opposite path and let everyone push me around. And what we're interested in here in situations like this has to do with an idea that's one of my favorite. And it is that we must learn to do what is in our power and refuse to do what is not. I'll repeat it. We must learn to do what is in our power and refuse to do what is not. Now, what exactly does that mean? Well, first, do what is in our power. What's in our power? What is in our power is to possess ourselves. That's always in our power. What's in my power is to attend to what my mind wants me to attend to. So that if my mind starts telling me, I've got to do this, I've got to be angry, I've got to be rageful, find a way to get even, or whatever it is, if I'm attentive to myself, if I'm aware of myself, I can actually see that the very moment that I'm thinking and feeling like that, not only am I not in charge of the person, I'm not even in charge of myself. Because now I'm being compelled, literally pushed around by my own negative thoughts and feelings that are telling me I need to do and become something different if I don't want to be run over. And I'm being run over. So, do what is in your power. Here's what's in your power. Be awake. Learn what it means to watch these thoughts and feelings that come up and that describe to you your situation. And then the second part is refuse to do what is not in your power. What's not in your power? You can't change that person that's trying to manipulate you out of the place. That's not in your power. I think we have altogether the wrong worries. I think we're more concerned wrongly with who and what we think we ought to be relative to some structure by which we're continually comparing ourselves, instead of seeing that the root of that comparative structure is the actual source of our stress. And if we could see the actual source of our stress being this comparative mind that is always compelled to try this path or that path, then we could drop that comparative mind, which we're completely capable of doing, and come up with a completely different order of confidence. One that isn't predicated on whether or not someone's trying to push me around or do something to me, but because I'm no longer trying to control those kinds of conditions. And then, quite often, and I'll close this with this, then instead of being someone who's pushed around by what I think is happening, I'm able to drop that incessant thinking that's going on inside of me and take new control of myself. And I will be more efficient. I will be a better employee. And it won't matter what Willy, Billy, or Silly does in my name, because who I work for will see that I am the superior individual.
Right. It's interesting that we tend to think that if I follow these higher ideas, these higher principles in my life, it'll somehow weaken me. But it's just the opposite. This is where we find our true strength.
Our true strength comes in being true to ourselves. Be true to yourself. To be true to yourself means you do not have to concern yourself with the falsehoods of others.
Yes.
Let's take the next question.
Okay. This one is from Mary, who lives in Abilene. And she says, lately, whenever I get what I want, it turns into a nightmare. I get it, and it becomes extremely distasteful. It could be an outfit, a person, a different way of life. It all becomes meaningless, and I feel lost. But I have no control. It's like something is forcing me to keep repeating this pattern. Is this normal?
Mary from Abilene. Growing up is hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, the reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul. To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.
Growing up is hard to do. There is a natural development that occurs in the life of an individual who begins to want, and we'll go back to the first question, who begins to want to possess himself or herself more than they want to prove themselves as being someone worthwhile as a prize to whatever it is that they're in that relationship with. So when we think about this, what we have to recognize and what I would urge Mary to do is simply recognize, okay, this is what's taking place in my life. I used to find certain pleasures in these things that I did. Now I don't find them in that. Does that mean, which is what the mind tells us, and by the way, this is important to understand, as you work and grow and develop and begin to see through the purposes that have been false in your life, the parts of you that had been clinging to those purposes will start to try to convince you, then if these things aren't real, life itself must be purposeless. Then what's the point of living if I can't do or have or be as my mind has imagined it? And I want you to understand, I want everyone to understand, but Mary in particular, look, that's a lie. Life has a purpose that is independent of the ways in which our present mind looks at life. Because our present mind has decided that this life is all about a race that we're supposed to win, when really it's a discovery ground in which we find that who we are has already become the winner of all that we are searching for. I thought I would add one last idea for Mary, who writes to us from Abilene. And that is that you must understand something that you have already seen that is true. And this is for all of us who reach those moments in our lives where we look out and it looks as though it's the great end of things. There doesn't seem to be anything further. Life has no end. Real life has no end. What always comes to an end is the parts of us that imagine an endless life. It imagines an endless happiness. It imagines an endless strength. Each time it comes up with some picture of a new this or a new that by which we'll be strengthened or somehow empowered to be better and happier people. Such mind games, such activity of the way the brain works and creates those ideas always comes to an end. And when we have been through a certain number of experiences in our lives, that same mind, that thought process begins to run out of things to imagine. Have you ever, Ellie, did you ever go to an amusement park? And, you know, you can, especially when you're young, you can go through one ride, you know, maybe 15, 20 times, mm-hmm. at least I could. Mm-hmm. But about the 21st time, you start to think to yourself, what's the point of this ride?
I always end up in the same place.
You always end up in the same place. And we start to know that about ourselves. We start to know that about the things that we think will empower us and make us happy. But when that mind begins to see that it cannot bring itself what it wants, it does not signal the end of our possibilities. It points out at that moment that if we'll let go of those parts of ourselves that define themselves through those things, then on the other side we will find a certain undefinable, indefinable aspect of ourselves that doesn't need an image to know itself through. I just wanted to clarify that. Mm-hmm. Let's take the next question.
This one is from Susan, who is in Green Bay, and she says, I'm suffering from depression. I wallow in self-pity all the time. I have very deep-rooted feelings of wanting to be loved and always keep searching for relationships, but I have been a failure all my life. Please help.
Here's two men, and they've come as workers, perhaps for the first time, to a place, a construction site. And they don't know each other. They're sitting there and they open up their metal pail lunch boxes. And the one fellow's, we'll call him Mike, he's eating his sandwich. It's a beautiful big sandwich. Other fellow's, we'll call him Willie. Willie's looking at his sandwich, takes a bite and shakes his head, takes another bite, shakes his head. Finally, Mike looks at Willie, says, what's wrong, man? I hate these sandwiches, says Willie. Mike says, well, that's too bad. Willie says, yours looks pretty good. Mike says, thanks, knowing what Willie's after. and a heartbeat later, even though Mike really doesn't want to do it, he says, well, man, look, why don't you suggest to your wife that she make a different kind of sandwich for you? Willie looks at Mike and says, I'm not married. Mike says, well, who makes your sandwiches every day? He says, I do. That's life. That's whether we see it or not. Every day, I'm telling you, this is the truth. Every day, we take into our hearts and we take into our minds those very things that our hearts and minds are in relationship with. And if we don't like what we're getting, then we mustn't look out and say the problems with the people that I know or the career path that I chose or whatever it is that a person wrongly loves to hang their hatred of life on. It has to do with what we're in relationship with in ourselves. So I would strongly suggest to Susan that she start over. Start over. Start to understand that there's no reason on earth, and this is important for all of us. I tell you, there's no end to this particular point. Start to understand that if you don't like what life is giving you in the moment, that all you have to do is look and see and be honest enough about it to recognize that what you say life is handing you is what you are handing you that you call life. You're looking at a picture, you're looking at an idea, an image, you're looking at something that the mind and the heart, in its negative conditioned state, there's no question about that, has formed, and that it hands to you as though it's the only thing there is to eat. Mm-hmm. And it's a lie. But in order to not go through that, we have to actually begin to understand the mechanisms in our own minds and hearts that continue to repeat behaviors, believing that somehow or other the outcome of the moment can change if I don't. Everything about every question a person asks will always point back to one thing. And that is that they need to see clearly within themselves that their experience of life is absolutely determined by what it is that they value in that moment. Change what you value, change what you're experiencing. And we'll get to more of that as we go along, I'm sure.
Yes, it's difficult to see that we're responsible for the way we feel, but seeing that is the beginning of a new kind of life.
It is, you know, it's strange. And all of us, who hasn't felt sorry for himself or herself? I mean, it's rampant, to tell you the truth. The drug industry is the largest industry on the planet. You got a problem, take a pill. But the problem is that the pill doesn't do anything except merely sublimate whatever that internal psychology is that's producing the problem. And so when I ask the question, who doesn't have self-pity, who doesn't feel like that? Everybody does, but the fact is it can be changed. Mm-hmm. It can be changed. And it's changed when we begin to recognize that what we are feeling in the moment, we can't be feeling unless we are in agreement with what we don't want to feel. Now, a person will say, no, I don't want to feel sorry for myself. I don't want to feel this self-pity. And I'm saying at that point, Susan, wake up, come back to yourself and look and see that the very thing that you say you don't want to be feeling is the same thing that your mind and heart is engrossed in. So we'll actually create a certain kind of experience for ourselves, not recognizing that there are parts of us that do want to perpetuate the pain. This is a big lesson. There are parts of a human being that want to perpetuate their unhappiness because it keeps a certain sense of continuity. At least I know who I am. And when we get tired of being the I am, that's the aching self, the sorry self, then we can begin to make the connection between the way the mind is working and the experience we have in those moments.
Mm-hmm. Okay, here's a question from George in Albuquerque. He says, I've had a business setback I blame myself for. Now faced with the decision to absorb the loss, I feel less than confident. I'm 62. I want to move toward my true self. Right now I'm struggling and wondering if I have developed too many traits to achieve letting go.
You know, this really runs well on the heels of Susan's questions. Am I too old of a dog to learn new tricks? Isn't that basically the question? The answer is we're never too old to change. We're never too old to change. It's funny this question should come up, because I was actually thinking about this today. I was thinking how there are a number of things that actually prove in an opposite way the old adage that you can't teach an old dog new tricks. You know, we seem when we're children, and science is shown this, that we learn languages faster, and basically we're more adaptive in our skills, and we're educated more quickly as we're young. And then as we start to get older, say around 12, well, when that was my age, you know, we lose that adaptability. But I think Ellen, that when we reach a certain age in our lives, assuming that we are willing to be honest enough to see the truth of our condition, and then from seeing the truth of that condition to go and find new ideas by which to see life through, that person who's come to that point where they think that they're too old of a dog, that old dog, he has more experience than the puppy. And that experience, even loss, can be a tremendous asset if the proper catalyst is included. This is where principles such as the ones that we're discussing become absolutely compulsory, necessary, because if I continue to ask the old dog to change, it won't. But if I introduce into that mind the principles that allow the old dog to recognize that he's barking up the wrong tree, then suddenly something completely different can happen, because the weight of my unhappiness, the weight of my loss, actually becomes a springboard, because I can recognize it as being not part of my fulfillment. And the last thing that I would say to George is that letting go doesn't take any strength at all.
You're listening to Letting Go with Guy Finley. For more information about Guy's life-empowering ideas, visit GuyFinley.com. We'll be back in a moment.
One reason the wind of good fortune is often found at the back of people who are successful in life is because these individuals are usually found moving ahead of it in anticipation of its arrival. Hi, this is Dr. Ellen Dickstein. The engaging words of best-selling author Guy Finley remind us that real success in life is a relationship between ourselves and a timeless greatness that lives within us. Each week, you can receive a powerful, life-affirming message from Guy, guaranteed to help you succeed with your wish for a new life. Each brief, uplifting insight reminds you that nothing can stop you from knowing the higher happiness your heart longs for. To receive Guy Finley's free weekly key lessons, just visit GuyFinley.com. Join the thousands of grateful individuals who are learning how to make themselves and our world a better place. Visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com.
Welcome back to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley.
That's one of the ways the mind tricks us. It tells us that I have to be strong or brave or wise or courageous to let go of what it is that I fear I've done or will become if X, Y, or Z happens. And none of that's true. Letting go is the natural solution when we see that holding on to what and who we have been is hurting us. Let's see what else we can learn from the rest of the questions. But can you see, Ellen, that almost every one of these questions, and I've been doing this for a long, long time, they all come to us from a part of ourselves that suffers not because it's mandatory that we suffer, mm-hmm. but because we don't understand ourselves.
Right.
Essentially, whatever it is that troubles us in any given moment is born out of what we aren't aware of. Mm-hmm. And if our unawareness of ourselves, of others that we're with, of the relationships we are in at large, if unawareness produces the pain, fosters the frustration, the sense of futility, if unawareness of who we are and what we are causes us to be in wrong relationship with life, and we suffer from that mistaken relationship, then there can only be one solution, which is new awareness of ourselves. Which is why we talk about the things we do, because it's so essential to begin to grab hold of these new ideas, not that they change us in themselves, but they can work as tools by which to remind us of what it is that we need to be doing with our lives that brings us what it is we really want, as opposed to dragging us to what never satisfies us.
Okay, well, here's our next question from Jay, who lives in Hartford. How do I consistently stay present in the now? I constantly find myself drifting, and the next thing I know, it's dinner time. I'm the same way, I think. Do you have a book or tape series that deals with this? I would like an exercise that I can work on that will keep me present.
Well, there's several answers to Jay's question. The first one is that you could have every tool in the book and still be a bad carpenter. I know from personal experience. In my youth, when I left the music business because of the passion that was stirred in me for the things that I now teach about, I became a jack of all trades, a handyman for a number of years to supplement my income. And I always thought the answer was a better tool. When the problem was my impatience and my arrogance and all of the things that kept me from doing what was necessary to learn a craft. And it's very much the same thing when it comes to one's spiritual life. We're always looking for another tool, the next thing that we can excite ourselves about. In other words, the next thing that we can think about ourselves through. And the real spiritual life has nothing to do with coming up with something new to think about ourselves through. It's learning to be through with thinking about ourselves at all. Mm-hmm. And there's a great difference in that. And one is always hoping that the reason that his mind or her mind is agitated or, you know, filled with lustful, wild, crazy, whatever it is that one's mind is filled with, the problem is that I just haven't found the right principle. But the problem is not that we haven't found the right principle. The problem is that there's a part of us that wants to build a library of principles so that it never deals with seeing that we have an unprincipled life. And having said that, I would suggest that, for one thing, if he wants to really change, Jay, slow down. I think of all the spiritual exercises that one can do, that slowing down is perhaps one of the most vital and powerful. Because the problem isn't that we can't achieve whatever it is that our mind tells us, because most of us can to some degree do that. The problem is that we're compelled to achieve. Which means that even when we get to whatever it is we've imagined is going to make us happy, we can't sit there. Can't stay anywhere, because then the mind has the next thing, the next image, the next tool that it's going to shape its life with. So a person remains a victim, not of the world that won't satisfy them through what they create, but through a conspiracy that exists in their own consciousness that's forever pushing them left and right, and in a hurry, I might add, to become something. Slow down. And that, what does that mean, slow down? Here's an example. You're at your office. You're sitting there. And the mind, in its habitual action, always wants to get through something. Because the mind, in its habitual mode, which works in the opposites, always imagines that it'll be free of the anxiety or the disturbance or the unhappiness it has if it could just accomplish what it pictures in its mind at that moment. Having pictured a certain order of peace, if they can just get to this point they've imagined, now that peace moment becomes the seat of their anxiety. Now they start to rush because they just get there. They'd be through and then they could go home. And by the way, go home to what? More anxiety. Mm-hmm. More rushing. Just slow down a little bit. This world goes too fast. And it's going nowhere fast. And our individual lives are the proof of that. Because even at 100,000 miles an hour, an anxious thought still takes you nowhere. So when we talk about what it means for a person to begin to find new tools, it has to begin with changing what we value. If I value a tool, a new idea, a new book, something that's going to stimulate me, because the sense of myself that I derive from that stimulation makes me feel like I'm accomplishing something, I will become a spiritual book addict. I'll become someone who believes that the only nourishment there comes from these things is from the stimulation I get when I'm reading them, not understanding that the source of myself has nothing to do with that stimulation, but that I must set these things down. Now, contradictory, having said that, I do have a new album called Living in the Now. I think it's called Living Now. Living Now, it's called. And it's a great series of talks, but every one of them will say the same thing in one way or another. Who you are and what you are is not found outside of yourself. It is found in the presence of the moment that is no different than your awareness of it. Slow down and take part in the presence of the moment, and you will find a power in yourself unprecedented.
And we have to do it now.
Yes.
It's not something I'll do when I get this exercise.
It's not a later. That's right. It's not when I get this or become that or when the next thing I'm working on finally, materializes and suddenly I'm a master of something. Mm-hmm. You know what, Ellen? I think that if we could understand a simple idea that takes a lifetime, we are not here to really master life. We are here to let what is good in life master us. Our relationship with the world and our people and friends and family, all the things around us, is always predicated on this idea that we must somehow or other be in charge of things. The truth is that the very things that we are always imagining we need to be in charge of us make us powerless, because when that which we've imagined will give us that power proves itself powerless in the face of an ever-changing world, then fear sinks in. And the minute we're afraid, then we struggle to get more power. The more power we struggle to get to be in control of ourselves, the more we lose it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, here's a question from Grant in Chicago.
Chicago.
On a personal life level, I am working on being in the now kind of thinking. When it comes to world matters lately, I tend to lose that calm mind and even lose sleep over things. I know my worrying about these things doesn't help, but I feel helpless when I see the state of the world and don't know what I can do about it.
This is an important question, actually, because so many of us today look out and we see a world that is spinning out of control. It is coming apart at the seams. And the reason it's coming apart at the seams is because fear generates fear. What's ruining the planet is as rampant as it is because people are wrongly trying to figure out how to protect themselves from what the world is generating that we fear. It's a dark cycle. It's a dark circle. The only way for any of us, and we must, you cannot separate what is planetary from what is personal. And the only way that any of us can begin to make a positive impact on this world and the way in which it is spinning out of control is to understand that the only way to stem this tide of darkness that we see is not to fall into it. That's it. We mustn't be a part of the darkness. It's as simple as this. Someone cuts you off on the freeway. This is something that I don't think many of us understand. You know the man on the freeway who's agitated at the person who cuts him off? is living from the exact same nature that turns a country against another country, and that there's no difference in the violence that rises up inside of him versus the dictator or the tyrant or the government that sets itself against the world to acquire the power it feels it needs. We'll talk about this in a minute. What's very important is that we don't look out and see they. You know what I mean by they? Them. Mm-hmm. Them's what does it to us.
Right.
It's so important that we don't look out at the world and say they and them. What we must do, just as we're about to do on an individual basis so that we can talk about what's troubling Grant, is to see, all right, here I am, and you know, I'm... And if you're honest, yeah, I'm mad. This person in that car is an idiot. Only idiots tailgate. And then, of course, in order to make him sorry that he's an idiot, you know, then you tailgate them. Or you at least think about it. So our minds, in the moment where something dark takes place, responds with darkness.
Hear Guy Finley in person. Guy lives and teaches in Merlin, Oregon, where he speaks four times each week at beautiful nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation. Visit us anytime and hear Guy's life-transforming principles in a friendly, serene, and inspiring environment. Visit GuyFinley.org or call 541-476-1200 to learn more about friendly ongoing classes. You are not alone in your quest for a new life. At Life of Learning, you'll meet others who are also seeking higher understanding, and you'll experience the power and inspiration of hearing Guy Finley in person. Plan to visit us and take the next step in your spiritual development. For information, call 541-476-1200, 541-476-1200, or visit GuyFinley.org. That's GuyFinley.org.
Someone says something unkind. We know what happens inside of us, what the reaction is when something unkind is spoken to us. An unkind response comes up. Now, we may say it if we think we're more powerful than the person to whom we're about to speak, but if the person seems to be our employer or someone who is insignificant that we don't want to lose, then we'll swallow this venom, but we're still the propagator of it. Just because I don't speak an evil word doesn't mean the evil doesn't emanate out from me. It does. Darkness, see, this is the thing. Negative states are not limited to you. In fact, the truth is they're not even yours. But what happens is we identify with negative states. We look at a world that's sinking in its own mess. And when we see the world sinking in its own mess and we become miserable, we believe that our misery is somehow an elevating power to the pain that we see taking place around us. And what could be more ridiculous than that? So what's the answer? Be awake. Be awake. Be a transformer, not a tormentor. We're a tormentor when we let negative thoughts and feelings produce torment inside of us that we blame it on them and they. We're a transformer when these negative states are seen by us, when we recognize what's happening, and instead of passing it along, do you remember that? Pass it along. Instead of passing along the unhappiness by talking to somebody about how terrible things are. Again, it's personal. I guarantee you that everyone listening to us knows exactly what it's like when they're unhappy, and they cannot wait to find somebody to tell how unhappy they are. You stop that. Don't you tell anybody how unhappy you are. Don't you complain to another human being as long as you live about your life. Why? Do you want the darkness to stop in the world? If you want the darkness to stop in the world, guess with whom it must stop. Then you become what you have been made to be on this planet. You and I are meant to be literally transformers, and not in a new age sense of the word. I mean in the sense of there being a living light inside of you whose very existence transforms whatever it touches. And when that light that we are capable of being aware of reveals to us, either by deed or action, the darkness of another individual towards us or our own thoughts towards ourselves, then in those moments we can become conscious of ourselves, and we can simply, listen how nice this is, we can let go of ourselves. What does it mean to let go of ourselves in this instance? It means I can let go of who I know I'm not. I know that hatred is wrong. I know that anger is wrong. I know that self-pity is wrong. Look how it ties back into some of the questions we've been having. And if I know that it's not right for me, how could it be right for anybody else? The only responsible thing to do is to bear that moment of darkness that has come up inside of me because of what has been stirred in me for whatever reason I see it. And instead of being the voice of it and victimized by the wrong identification with it, I let the light vanquish it. I let the light be the naturally victorious state, intelligence, presence that it is, and then I'm no longer the perpetrator of this pain on the planet. I've become part of a positive process, something that's changing the world for the better. Mm-hmm. Because I, you, the people who are listening, are willing to do that.
Yes, that's such an exciting idea.
It's the most exciting idea in the world. And when you really understand that that's a possibility, mm-hmm. what bad can happen to you? Everything works for the good when everything in you wants the good more than it wants to be the possessor of that pain, who wants to be the perpetrator of figuring out how to punish others for what they've done. Enough of that, mm-hmm. I say.
Okay, here's a question from Victor, who lives in Tucson. Recently, I had an experience in meditation that was extraordinary. It made me realize that I needed to meditate more frequently. The problem is that I'm finding it extremely difficult to meditate now. I feel that I have failed, and I'm having a hard time dealing with the resulting depression. I refuse to give up. Any suggestions?
First, good for you. Don't give up. Never give up. Never give up. Never give up. But do let go. What does that mean? Don't give up, but let go. Here's a quick insight into this condition that Victor writes to us about. We are a unique creature. Within us, not as a temporal location, meaning not a place physically, but within what we are, the whole of us is the universe in essence. Made in the image of God means that we ourselves have in our consciousness the content of all that which the universe is made from, darkness and light alike. And when we see something in ourselves, when we have a moment of truth, when we see deeply some fact about ourselves, that's not so much that light that we have gone into the light, in quotes. It's more like the light pierces a certain veil in us. Something comes into us that reveals what we formerly had not understood about ourselves. Now, the important thing to understand is that when something is seen within us that has not been seen before, that has caused us some kind of unhappiness, that unhappiness does not go, yippee, I've been seen. It doesn't want to be seen. Who hasn't had the experience of catching themselves having done something wrong, and as quickly as they've seen themselves do something wrong, look away from what they did because they don't want to see they did something wrong? That mind is at work all the time. And when I have a breakthrough in quotes in meditation, if I have a deep moment of peace, if there's a split second by which I see something of a larger scale, there is a natural repercussion on the parts of us that do not want the larger life, that do not want that light to be our partner and pal, you know, through life. So it's going to come up. Don't worry about it. Start over. Start over. Start over.
Okay. Here's a question from Jonathan, who lives in Bayonne. How do I deal with feelings of nostalgia? Sometimes they are so strong, I feel that I need to be at a past, happier time in my life. How should I deal with these feelings?
Jonathan, write this down. And by the way, everyone should who's listening. Happiness is not a time. Real happiness has nothing to do with the conditions that our mind calls up. Particularly when, and it's important to recognize this, what good is the happiness that I used to have if thinking about it ruins the moment that I'm in? See, the problem is that our mind, asleep to itself, doesn't see contradictions in itself like that. Here I am, and I'm thinking to myself, life is miserable. I don't want to be who I am and where I am. And I'm not making fun of anything here. This is a terrible situation because most human beings spend a great deal of their time in nostalgic activity. Why? Because the mind paints the pictures of a time when, and then fill in the blank. I was better looking. I had a six-pack ab, whatever that means. Across the board, the various ways in which our mind tells us that there were better times. The mind that paints the picture of a better time draws you into a process of unconscious comparison. That unconscious comparison is the root of conflict. And in that conflict, the present moment can be nothing but something that troubles us. Learn in the moments where the past wants to draw you back into it, Jonathan. Instead of going back for a happier time, recognize that it's possible to let go of those pictures and do what very few people will ever do. And this is a challenge, if you will. And what very few people will ever do is see that the very thing in their hearts and minds that's troubling them isn't the pictures, the problems, but that there's a certain part of us that doesn't want to be alone or empty for a split second. But I tell you, and it's a great spiritual truth that everyone on this planet should learn, that when we are willing to be quiet, alone, what the mind says empty, we are not quiet, we are not alone, and we are not empty. Because in that moment, we stand in a relationship with a completely different order of reality, that if we were willing to understand and accept it, would give us all the happiness that our heart could possibly stand, because instead of being in a time and place, we would be in the presence of happiness itself. You must find this out for yourself.
So this comes back to what we were talking about, being in the now. That's where the answer is.
Always and forever. Thanks, Dr. Ellen.
Thank you, Guy.
Hello, I'm Desi Arnaz Jr. You've been listening to Letting Go with best-selling author Guy Finley. To learn more about Guy Finley and his nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation, visit GuyFinley.com, where you'll find a host of free, life-changing information. Thanks for joining us today.
Love, the brightest and most powerful force in the universe. Love melts stress and cancels resentment. It gives birth to kindness and is the fuel of success. Love is at the heart of every great relationship and is the true essence of lasting peace. In his new book, Apprentice of the Heart, best-selling author Guy Finley explores lessons in life only love can teach. This breakthrough book contains the tools you need to strengthen and deepen all of your relationships with family, friends, coworkers, and with the present moment itself. Apprentice of the Heart, available now at GuyFinley.com and fine bookstores everywhere. Joseph Polansky of Diamond Fire magazine writes, "The reader is lifted up to a whole new realm, a rarefied region of the soul." To order your copy of Guy Finley's Apprentice of the Heart, visit GuyFinley.com. That's GuyFinley.com. The relationship your heart longs for already exists.